So with Minpaku specifically, if the purpose of the purchase is to definitely run a short-term stay business there, then the first thing we do before we put bigger amounts of money into organizing a viewing or a structural inspection, the first thing to do would be to contact a local, not a local, a national short-term stay research and management company, and give them any potential listing that you're interested in, and get them to produce a report on how likely that property is to comply with licensing requirements, because it is pretty strict in Japan. Osaka is more Minpaku friendly than other cities, but it's still, there are local regulations. So some things we can fix, like for example, if they say there has to be a dedicated reception area, we can set up a table at the entrance. But if they say you have to be no closer than 500 meters to a local school, and you are, there's no amount of renovation we can do to fix that. Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so for today's episode, this is an audio-only conversation I've recently had with a new client, lovely couple, who are looking for an older Japanese house in Osaka specifically, with the goal in mind of turning it into a short-term stay or Airbnb-type operation and potentially applying for the casual short-term stay rental license, what's known in Japan as a Minpaku license, and then potentially leverage that for a business manager visa, like our friends at the Benton Homestead did. Fantastic episode, by the way, which sheds a whole lot of light on that topic as well. Highly recommended listening if you haven't checked it out yet. We'll link to it again in this episode's show notes. And so we talk visa requirements, Minpaku licensing requirements, and how to prepare your property for short-term stay leasing. We also talk a bit about monthly or medium-term rentals, as well as normal long-term rentals, and which of these other types of rentals require any licensing. How management works for all of those, who are our typical investor clients who buy into each of those, what sort of goals do they all have in mind, and why do they choose the types of properties that they choose. And then, because the purpose is to eventually live in the house when they move to Japan, we also talk about the challenges in taking over a property that's being rented out long term. So a really nice deep dive on all things related to rental income in Japan. Enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you again on the other side.
You look beautiful, Daniel. Okay, let me just bring up your, sorry, go ahead.
Daniels.
These
are
okay.
Both Daniels.
Yeah, I go by my middle
but he
name.
Goes by his middle name.
What is your middle name?
Lee.
Yeah.
Lee. Okay, so Daniel, yeah. Lee, and Lena. Lee and Lena sounds kind of cute together too. Okay, so yeah. Let me just dig up your original email, because I've got no memory if it's not electronic. Give me a second.
Of course. And I think we just sent one recently of an update, so.
And especially Osaka City. Operation Master's Degree, Art and Administration. Oh, you used to live in Sapporo. Okay, but you don't want to live in Sapporo. You want to go to Osaka.
Yes.
Yeah, well, we don't want to have a house in Sapporo with the snow.
I just don't want to live in the cold.
Makes sense.
And small house in Osaka City, future and for investment. So before we get deeper into the message, what do you mean for living in and for investment? What do you mean by investment?
I think what we want to do is purchase it now for either like minpaku or above short-term rentals, and then we would want to kind of, in a couple of years, we would kind of look into the business management visa, and then that specific place we're purchasing now would be the one we're living at.
Okay, so it's starting off as an investment and then maybe converted into a family home down the track?
Yes.
Yeah, and also to like give us a basis to launch the visa off of. To say that we've started this business and we're
okay. So the visa is going to be based on the minpaku business, you think? You hope?
We hope, yeah. Or short-term rentals and things, yeah.
Okay, but, with a single
Daniel's a little different. He's probably not going to look into a visa and mm-hmm. just for investment. And also, if we do start the property management, then Daniel could potentially be under if we ever start a company.
But it's the same property we're talking about for all three of you. It's not two separate
properties. No, different property. He's looking for a different property.
So, yeah, okay. So we've got two.
Right. Are you sure that a single house would generate enough income for you to continuously renew the visa? Because you're going to need to be generating... depends on where you're living, but if it's in Osaka, it could be close to the maximum, which is about 3.5 million yen in taxable income per person mm-hmm. on the visa per year.
So we're thinking of potentially looking out a little bit further. Well, still in Osaka, but not in the main city.
So we're looking at other properties further on down the line when we actually move over there. But this will be the like to establish that we have been running this business for a while when we do go for the visa. Right.
Okay. Just make sure that you don't get it for 1 year and then it's not renewed because you're not making enough taxable income. That can be mm-hmm. an issue if you've relocated, like if you've uprooted your entire life and then they say, okay, 1 year and goodbye. That's not going to be so much fun, right? Okay. So with Minpaku specifically, if the purpose of the purchase is to definitely run a short-term stay business there, then the first thing we do before we put bigger amounts of money into organizing a viewing or a structural inspection, the first thing to do would be to contact a national short-term stay research and management company and give them any potential listing that you're interested in and get them to produce a report on how likely that property is to comply with licensing requirements, because it is pretty strict in Japan. Osaka is more minpaku friendly than other cities, but it's still, there are local regulations. So some things we can fix, like for example, if they say there has to be a dedicated reception area, we can set up a table at the entrance. But if they say you have to be no closer than 500 meters to a local school and you are, there's no amount of renovation we can do to fix that. So before
so what organization did you say will come? What group are we contacting?
It's just a company that we refer people to normally that can research licensing and provide you with a report on. There's two kinds of licenses, the Minpaku license and the Yokan license, which is the more solid one, I guess. So they'll produce a report on each particular listing to tell you how likely that listing is to comply with licensing requirements. Down the track, if you end up purchasing a property, they can also help you manage it and apply for the license and whatnot. But in the initial stages, we just need them for research.
And then for 1 month, like if you want to do monthly rentals, is that still under the minpaku licensing?
No. So anything done for a period of at least 1 month and with a tenancy lease in place, and that can be a digital lease or it can be like a single page tenant, doesn't have to be anything fancy, but you have to have some sort of tenancy lease in place, then it falls under normal rentals, which nobody can tell you to do or not to do.
Okay. And then, then the company would not be able to refer, kind of go over that stuff too, though, right? So this is just a minpaku licensing kind of recommendations?
Well, you don't need any special research for monthly stays. No need to ask anyone to research that for you, because that falls under normal rentals. The question would be whether we can get local property managers who will agree to take on the property, and that would depend on how profitable they think it might be and how often during the year you want to use it. For example, if you're using it always during peak tourist season, then it's not going to be very profitable for them to just manage it for you low season, so they might not take it on.
Okay.
But that would come, I guess, later. And I mean, if you want to, we can research and ask those companies in advance if what they think about this property, if they agree to take it on or not, if you want to base the purchase on that condition. So we can do that earlier in the process if you wish. But normally we would be, if the goal is monthly rentals, we'd be purchasing the property and then seeing what we can do and which company we can work with and doing the best we can to rent it out by the month. But if it's definitely Minpaku, we want to make sure that you can get the license in advance.
Right, right. Of course.
Totally up to you anyway, the order of things. But the Minpaku license research is going to cost 20,000 yen for the first property they investigate in each municipality. And then if you have other listings in the same municipality, let's say within Osaka City, then 10,000 yen for each subsequent property they research. That's probably going to be cheaper than organizing a viewing trip, whether it's you coming here from overseas, which is obviously going to cost a lot, or us sending somebody even from within Osaka. If they have a look at 2, 3, 4 properties and do remote viewings for you on the same day, that will also be 20,000-30,000, whatever the case may be. Okay. So before we start, and definitely a structural inspection, which is going to be about $1,000. So before we go down that rabbit hole, we want to make sure you can get a license, if Minpaku is really the goal.
Right.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in, fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed Minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
And I guess what is the general, like, do people prefer the Minpaku over the month to month? Why would you choose the month to month over Minpaku?
People as in are as just in like the landlords,
I guess people that
guests
are looking for investments. Properties.
No, it's more a case of number one, how hands-on you want to be. The shorter the stays, the more involved you're gonna have to constantly be, because you have to constantly monitor occupancy rates, vacancy rates, what's the competition doing? Should we increase the charge? Should we reduce the charge? You know, how are we doing for the year compared to last year? You're basically running a business, right? Obviously, because I mean you're gonna be applying for a business manager visa, so you're aware of that. With monthly stays, people can be staying in for 3, 4, 5, 6 months, anywhere between 1 to 12 months normally. So that's less of a constant on your toes kind of thing, but then you run the risk of, you know, having somebody in there when you want to use the property, right? With the Airbnb, it's easier. You just block off in the calendar weeks or days that you're going to be using it. But with monthly stays, somebody comes in, rents it for 2 months, and then they say, hey, we want to extend another 2 months. It'd be silly to kick them out because you want to spend a couple of days there, right?
Yeah.
Right, right.
So and in that case, you might want to use that income to just pay for your Airbnb or hotel or whatever you'll be using when mm-hmm. you come over.
Okay.
And long-term rentals is the easiest, but that's not going to get you any kind of business management visa.
Yeah, and also,
the yields are a lot lower.
Well, mainly with long-term, we'd be worried about when we actually want to move over there, it'll be difficult to, like, regain access to the house because there'd be someone
legally, yeah, but Japanese tenants are not really an issue as long as you give them 6 months notice. If you give them 6 months notice before the lease expires and you compensate them, because it does cost them 6 to 10 months of rent to move, if you offer them compensation equal to that amount and send them a letter 6 months in advance, they're usually not. I mean, we never had anybody insist or take us to court, and they would have a legal leg to kind of stand on if they take you to court. But I mean, if you're moving, I don't see that a judge will ever say that, no, you're not allowed to move into your property. Well, anyway, no one's ever done anything remotely like that to us. Japanese okay. tenants tend to be very docile.
Okay, that's good. Because I think we've heard, we've read some horror stories kind of on the interwebs about
if
just
you
not
have
being able to.
If you have a foreigner, a gaijin tenant, then they tend to be, especially if they're American, they tend to be more gung-ho about litigation and no, I will not move out. I've heard those stories too. And if you have a very bored old Japanese man, oh, that looks yum. If you have a very old, bored old Japanese man.
I was just like,
I'm
getting tired of the blurry. And then he's, of course, getting dinner.
we had some annoying old Japanese tenants who constantly kept calling and complaining about stuff. So I guess that tenant profile could potentially be problematic if they have a lot of time on their hands and they're bored. But again, never happened to us in over 200 properties, so I doubt it.
Oh, okay, good to know. I think we are either looking at Minpaku licensing or short-term monthly rentals,
right,
are kind of what we're doing. So I guess, like you said, we would be referring to a company to see if, like, I guess the area we're looking at is profitable or not.
Not just the area, it has to be the particular listing, the actual property.
Right.
They'll need the address, they'll need the layout of the property, it has to be specific.
Right.
So there's two parts to the research. One is to find out what the municipality requires in terms of regulations, and the other is to see whether each particular listing fits those regulations. That's why they charge a bit less, half the price for any subsequent properties in the same municipality.
And does that kind of give you also like a viewing? Will they also like show you like kind of what it looks like? Or because right now
the viewing we have to organize with the listing agent. They have nothing to do with the company that we'll be contracting for the research. So the way it works is there's going to be a listing agent advertising the property. They would normally not be very foreigner savvy. They'd be a bit scared of dealing with scary gaijins in English. And then somebody like us or a buyer side agent will act as your English speaking proxy. And we or they will be able to handle the purchase remotely in English on your behalf and liaise with the listing agent to conduct either a remote viewing, or if you're here in person, then you can come and view the property. The listing agents would normally request that somebody accompany you who speaks fluent Japanese. So even if you're here, we'll probably have to send somebody in with you.
Okay, so we'll do all of that like viewing stuff first, and then we'll look into like if it's able to do the Minpaku.
It's up to you. I mean, a viewing trip, let's say we line up 3 or 4 properties in Osaka for like a viewing day. We do have somebody from Osaka that we can send in with you. They charge about 4,000 yen per hour from memory. They'll probably spend about 5 hours with you. So a viewing trip will probably be about 20,000 yen, and research on the first property that you want to verify licensing for will also be about 20,000 yen. So I guess, maybe if we can find
let's say 3 to 5 potential listings to view on a single day, that mm-hmm. would be the most cost efficient way to do it. And then prioritize them based on what you saw during the viewing and float the first 1 or 2 or 3, however many you choose, for research on the licensing.
Okay. I think that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Some things to consider. And then
after that, before we go, we haven't spoken about your budget yet, but if you're looking at older and cheaper houses, then we'll probably want to do a structural inspection as well.
Yeah, yeah.
We and that we that. Would really, yeah. that we'll only do on a property that you really want to already submit an offer on. So we'll right. submit an offer. On the offer, we'll note that it's pending structural inspection report. And once the offer is approved, then we'll go ahead and commission the inspection, because there's no point paying for that if your offer is not confirmed.
Of course, of course. Yeah, we've actually, he's been listening to your podcast. Yeah. And,
oh, thank you.
and we've been just looking at a lot of kind of things online as well, so.
So with that in mind, let me continue through your email. Give me a second.
I think our budget and range has now kind of expanded a little bit since my first email.
Okay, so the first email I see up to 8 million yen, including renovations. And then I'm scrolling upwards.
And yeah, I think we're a little less than that right now.
Not expanded, contracted. Okay.
Well, at least for the budget from what I sent you, yes. But from the listings I've sent you, I think we've kind of increased the budget from the listings that we shared.
Like pre-renovation.
Yeah. Stuff.
Okay, so I'm seeing your top three. Do you want me to share my screen? We'll review them together for a minute.
Yeah, we also sent a new top one that we just were looking at.
Yeah, the number one on that first list we realized later was leasehold.
So. And we don't want a leasehold.
No, you don't want a leasehold. Okay, yeah. So let me open that and then I'll share my screen. Hang on. Sharing. Internet Explorer, where are you? There you are.
And Sumo's a good site, right? I Sumo looks like At Home to me as well.
Yeah, Sumo, At Home, homes.co.jp, Nifty Homes. There's a four or five major properties. Are you on AkiaMart, by the way? That's the easiest way that I know for to search, because they collate everything. AkiaMart. Okay.
Yeah.
The free version will only let you see up to 20,000.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate part.
The subscription is pretty cheap, though. I'll give you a discount code for it, too. Let me do that now so I don't remember. So I don't forget. AkiaMart discount code. Just a company name, NTI. So if you use that on checkout, I think the first 3 months are cheaper or free or something similar.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
It might not be free. Don't do it, but it's definitely cheaper. Yeah. Okay. So this one, 6.8 million yen, built 1983. So you're aware that past about 30 years of age, their maintenance expenses on these very light wooden houses are going to be increasing pretty rapidly, right? You should be factoring in at this age, maybe $2,000 to $3,000 a year on average. And then once it hits 40, 50, maybe $3,000 to $4,000 a year on average. And also they're more likely to have major structural issues that'll come up during the structural inspection if they're older than 30.
I think we considered that, but this one I think is steel frame. Does that make a difference?
It's a little bit better, yeah.
And it's also had the roof replaced in 2023.
It had some major renovations in 2023.
Yeah.
Interiors, interior walls, I'm not sure what that means, and the roof. I mean, we'll have to inquire, because when they say we've renovated the roof, it could be that they've replaced a few tiles. When they say they've done the interior renovation on the wall, I don't really know what that means. It could be just wallpaper, or it could be they fixed some major cracks in the wall. I don't know. We'll have to ask them. But it's on city sewage and city water, which is not bad. Let's have a quick look at the photos.
But this will be on the higher budget of our range, I think, because if we did get another place that required major renovations, like 50,000 would be, well, this is like $45,000 if the conversion's exact. So
I'm not seeing the, oh, there's the exterior. Okay. So just bear in mind that with these, I can't see exactly if they're completely adjoining or just very close, but any kind of renovation repairs you'll want to do on the exterior, you will always have to coordinate and potentially compensate your neighbors because you might be doing some damage to their property as well. And it's also probably not rebuildable. I don't anything this close to the public road out front and this close to the neighbors is probably not rebuildable, meaning if it all comes down in an earthquake, you will be able to collect your insurance policy, which will enable you to rebuild a new home elsewhere, but you will have to purchase another land plot because this one is not going to be rebuildable.
But does non-rebuildable mean that like nothing can be built on that plot if it's destroyed, or just it'll be a different type of build?
If it's just a matter of having to build something smaller, it'll say setback, which means you need to set back, let's say, 4 meters from the main road. But if it says non-rebuildable, it's non-rebuildable. I'm not seeing it here, but I'm guessing it would be. Probably just based on the look of the exterior, I'm assuming it's non-rebuildable, but we'll have to find out. We'll have to contact them and find out. Okay, so that's everything that we've seen already. I guess aside from its age, which I don't like that much, I don't really have any big comments on that one. And I'll go to your other list. So the first one you said was leasehold. I'll go on to the second one.
Yeah, move on to the second one. Yeah. We already know the problems that you may mention. Especially the age. So the photos looked pretty good. Maybe this one would probably require some minor renovations, at least aesthetically.
57, it'll require more than minor renovations. I guarantee that the structure is not going to be sound. But it's not anything that the naked eye can see, but when we conduct a structural inspection, it's very, very likely to have some major issues at
Okay,
this
and
age. I mean,
what are the
if it was
renovations?
pre-World War II, like those big, massive countryside farmhouses, they were built to last, but anything after that, after World War II, is just really flimsy.
Yeah,
So
we
at
saw
this
some
age,
1920s ones, but I don't know that we're gonna are interested in any of those. So usually with these, how extensive are these renovations? Would you like know?
it's hard to say. I mean, let's say the entire roof needs to be replaced, could be somewhere between 2 to 4 million yen. If there's tilting, sinking, termite tracks, that's really hard to quantify. Sometimes it's going to be, better to just demolish and I mean, if you have to pay 10 million yen to renovate and building a new one is 15 million yen, it doesn't really make sense, right?
So we don't want to also purchase this place where we have to spend the same amount of money renovating it. We want one that is mostly potentially doesn't need all of this
I
renovation.
don't know about the same amount of money, but if you're looking at anything this cheap and this old, it will probably cost close to the same price. If I
That's good to
would, I
know.
mean, we normally tell people to start looking at 8, 9 million yen and stay as close as they can to 20 years and younger if you want to avoid that. But otherwise, yeah, except the age, which is in my book a major no-no, except for that, no special comments. And then the third one.
I think, was this one also old? I can't remember.
Think the three original ones you
Oh, we're
picked
pretty
were pretty
old,
old.
yeah.
That looks like 70s, I think. Not as old as that last one. I don't know. We'll have
Yeah,
to
it's
look in a
not as
second.
old as the previous one.
Well, then, good thing we didn't even start with the first one.
What was that one?
That one was like 1950s, also.
Well, I mean, you'll probably want to do the interior, but I've seen worse.
Oh, yeah, we've seen a lot of not so great interiors as well. I think we like the outside of this one a
65, not
lot.
70, almost
Oh,
70.
yeah, 65.
Okay, sewage, water supply. I missed that, or did they not mention?
No, I think some of them either have or they don't.
Oh no, here we go. Should be here.
Oh.
No. Okay, so with this one, I just confirm. It's in Osaka City as well, right?
This is, yeah, in Hirano, part of.
Yeah, I Hirano don't know Ward. That anywhere in Osaka City would not have public sewage and public water, but just to confirm, because they haven't written it here, that's something we'll need to ask the agent about just to make sure. Because if you need to install a septic tank, it's going to be about ¥1,000,000. If you need to connect to city water, which city sewage, which would be better, it would be, depending on where the pipes run to, could be up to 3-4 million, 2-3 million yen. But again, it's Osaka City, so I doubt that's going to be an issue. Maybe they just forgot to write it. I hope. We'll find out.
Right.
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's A-K-I-Y-A-M-A-R-T, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
And I think our list is being more refined. So I guess our next questions are like, what would be kind of next steps into like listings?
So Faye forwarded your explanation of services document, which explains how we work, what's involved. So I'll caveat all of that to say that we're a bit swamped with clients and frantically recruiting and trying to train new staffers at the moment. Mm-hmm. So the full purchase facilitation where we do everything on your behalf and you pay us a fixed percentage of the purchase price, we're not going to be able to do for the next few months at least, maybe towards the end of the year if we're lucky. Bookkeeper, bilingual bookkeeper is what we're struggling with at the moment, which is like finding a unicorn here in Fukuoka. So as soon as we get that sorted, we'll be able to do the full purchase facilitation. But until then, what we've been doing and will continue to do is we put people directly in touch with a foreigner-friendly agent who will be acting as your proxy.
Okay.
Logistically, same as we would have done. So again, remotely in English. Being realtors, though, they're not like the kind of conversation that we just had, they're usually not going to have with you. Their job is either research listings for you or they work on listings that you provide to them and they facilitate that transaction, make sure everything is done legally and properly. But they're not going to tell you what questions to ask or have super strategic conversations. So we can come in if you want us to for a few $100, which is also a lot cheaper than having us do everything. And we guide them on what due diligence we want done. We review the structure and inspection report together, review documents before you sign them, make sure they're just hand-holding you and making sure you're not making any costly mistakes. So that we can do at any time. If you want us to do everything on your behalf where you only need to talk to us and we talk to everybody else, etc., that'll be towards the end of the year.
Yeah, I think we can do some talking ourselves. Yeah.
So we have actually been in contact with a realtor.
In
Osaka.
I don't know if you heard of Remax.
Remax is just the franchise. There could be anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So we were on Real Japan looking at listings. And they have their like seminar every month or so. And through that individual, they suggested this individual from Osaka. And she actually sent us a quick, here, I can share my screen too. I'll send a request.
Yeah.
She actually sent us this morning. Can everyone see it?
Yep.
Yeah. So we were looking closer to Osaka Central, but she was saying like it'll probably be pretty hard to find what we want within City Central, and suggested these two listings. Though it doesn't come with any photos or any information, but I think you would love the year of this one. At least it's 1993. and the second one is going for 1988. But okay. we don't have any info, and I don't see them anywhere. Like, I scoured Sumo to see if these existed there. I didn't see it. I think that's also another question I had was, would these potential agents also have other listings that are not posted on Sumo or At Home and such?
Occasionally, but it's not really an off-market kind of market here. Occasionally, if they're the listing agent, then they'll be appointed to sell the property, and then you might get access to it before they actually get to posting it on the portals if you're in constant contact with them. But otherwise, about the same. They've got the National Realtor Database, which is called RAINS. But the only properties that agents post there are agents who are willing to share their commission. So the way it works here is the listing agent charges the seller, and whoever brings in a buyer charges the buyer. A lot of the agents will be, either because they're greedy or company policy, want to double dip and charge both sides. So they don't want a buyer side agent involved in the sale. So people who agents who post on RAINS on the national database are indicating that they're agreeing to share their commission. So that which a lot of them don't. So that database actually usually has less listings than what you see on the open market.
Okay.
But occasionally, yes, something would slip through that just hasn't gotten there yet, and only this agent has access to, but that's quite rare.
Okay. Because I didn't see these, but I may have to maybe just fix the parameters.
Sumo's not the only website, though. There are some properties that will be on Homes but not be on Sumo, and vice versa.
Yeah, I tried At Home. I did some cross reference, and I feel like there's just a lot less at home, and I haven't checked the other ones as much as Sumo.
Mart is a good way to search all of them, and I'll also send you. I'll just do it now because I really forget if I don't do it now.
Okay.
Give me a sec.
What's up, sharing?
Let me just. I'll just reply to your last email with those links.
Awesome.
So Homes, which you have, myhome.nifty.com, Sumo, and At Home. Those are the four main ones.
Okay.
And again, AkiaMart will scout all of them for you.
Okay. And then, so we are in, like I mentioned, we are talking to this person. What would we do if we find a foreign-friendly agent? We would have them look at the listings and or share listings of us, and then we would share them with NIT or NTI.
With NTI, with us, you mean? Depends on the agent. Like, the ones that we normally have vetted and recommend are comfortable in like WhatsApp or LINE chat groups. And then we create a group together, and then I can jump in with feedback really quickly if I need. A lot quicker than email anyway, if I need to.
Okay, she did mention WhatsApp.
So if she's open, just tell her that if you do need our help, just tell her that you're bringing in a consultant and you're going to create a WhatsApp chat group together with them. And then, you know, I can jump in with feedback at any point. Yeah.
But these individuals will not be able to tell us if it's going to be like Minpaku licensable. That would also go through a separate list, like you mentioned.
You can ask them, but they would probably need to ask the listing agent, and some of the listing agents and sellers will not want to deal with somebody who's going to be turning it into a minpaku. So we usually check it on the sly, kind of thing.
Okay.
But it's up to you. I mean, if she's communicative and responsive, then you can just share your concern with her and ask her if, you know, it'd be all right to ask the seller. And if not, we'll just, you know, research it separately. But in any case, if it hasn't been run as a Minpaku before, I wouldn't necessarily rely on the seller or the listing agent's reply on that, because they can be just quickly browsing the city website and saying, yeah, it looks like it'll comply. It's not a proper research. If it has been run as a Minpaku, which means it has had a license, then that's pretty much a given that you'll be able to reissue the license for a different owner.
Oh, and will they know that, like, pretty quickly, whether it's been a Minpaku?
They will, but again, if you ask the question that that property has not been a Minpaku before, you'll raise all kind of red flags for the seller who might not be interested in going ahead with you.
Okay.
Because some of them, especially the ones who still have, like, let's say it was an owner-occupier who lived there, and now they needed to move for whatever reason, they're still in contact with the neighbors. They're going to get the complaints. Hey, you sold your property to these gaijins and they're renting it out to tourists and there's noise here all throughout. They don't want to be in that situation. So unless it specifically mentions something about Minpaku on the listing, I wouldn't necessarily ask the seller and the listing agent about that.
But are Minpaku even listed on the... on the listings? I don't think
sometimes it's a selling point. Yeah, so if it's a property that's been run as a guest house Minpaku or something like that before, then often they'll say, hey, it's a Minpaku, it's generating income already, or it used to generate income before COVID and you can turn it into a Minpaku again. So sometimes it's a kind of feature, but if it's not noted on the listing, I wouldn't go poking them too much.
I don't think I've seen it. I've just seen that, like, for investment, but I don't know if that means the same thing
for investment. Could be just a normal rental, could be either or.
Okay.
If it used to be run as a Minpaku, it'll usually be a kind of selling point and they'll try to sell it to somebody who wants to run a Minpaku. So they'll usually note it on the listing.
So is it... So what our first kind of... Would you recommend, like, our first actions to really be, like, to hone down on our listings that we find and share it with this potential agent, or have them provide us the list?
Well, first off, let's decide on which buyer side agent you want to work with. If you're comfortable with her and you want to work with her, then yes, I would float all listings to her. Or to save on time, again, see if she's open to it, create the chat group, throw me in there too. And then we can all provide feedback on the listings, whatever she's looking into on your behalf, or get her to research for you. Either way works.
Yeah, would be more comfortable for someone that has worked with NTI before. What do you think?
We're happy to meet new agents. Maybe we will be working with her.
Yeah, we could also just potentially just ask her, right? Would we just tell her that we are working, like...
Yeah, if you know that you want us consulting on the purchase, then tell her that you've got a consultant. Make sure that she understands we're not an agent, so she doesn't need to share her commission with us or anything like that. You're paying us separately, and then if she's open to it, we'll start with her. And, you know, if we run into any hurdles, then we can always consider the option of switching to another agent.
Yeah, we don't really know right now how we feel, I guess, about this individual.
We're supposed to be meeting with her later this week.
Right. But she hasn't particularly responded to, like, did she? I don't know if there's a new reply today because of the time difference, but...
A lot of the agents are closed Tuesday and Wednesday in Japan because they work Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, okay.
So normally they'll be more responsive around Thursday, Friday, and even Saturday every week.
Okay.
A little bit on Monday, but Monday they'll be catching up with the weekend backlog, because usually on the weekend they go out and about with the... That's when people can actually view properties.
Yeah.
So then they'll get to the office Monday, they'll start catching up on their backlog, they'll get some replies to you during Monday, maybe Tuesday, and then they're off until Thursday, Friday.
Okay. I guess...
But I mean, yeah, have a Zoom call with her, see how you feel once you've kind of seen her face-to-face kind of thing. Yeah. And then decide. We can... I'd rather not... Because relationships are really important in Japan. There's there's usually no any exclusivity or legal reason not to work with a bunch of agents, but they only get paid on settlement, and we make them work a lot until we get to settlement. So I don't like to jump between buyer's agents and then dump three of them and only go with one of them after they've already worked for us.
That makes sense.
Yeah, we could definitely see what she says in communications. I guess then what would be kind of the next steps when we get her kind of connected with well, or let her inform her that we're that NTI is consulting.
Then again, if she's open to that, create a chat group with all of us. And then if you have listings, put them in the chat group and we'll review them together. If not, then give her the criteria. Well, you already given her the criteria and get her to research the new listings for you. I would, again, maybe before you ask her to research more, try to see if your budget allows for anything a little bit younger. Just so we're not buying into like massive unknown expenses is more what I'm concerned about.
Yeah. Daniel, have any questions?
No, this is good. I actually, after hearing this, kind of agree that maybe we should look for newer houses that could fit within the budget, of course.
Mm. Yeah. I mean,
there's the balancing act there with Minpaku. You want to be close to center or at least close to major tourist attractions. Mm-hmm. So in central Osaka, 20, 30 years and younger will be expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I guess
maybe near Shinosaka Station would be a good location. It's a lot cheaper there. And that's where the bullet train stops. So a lot of traffic will be coming in via bullet train.
Yeah, we're looking at a bunch of different places and didn't know. Like I'm kind of on Airbnb while I'm also looking at the different places to see if there are any. And some of the locations don't have a lot, but I don't know what that is like for like, will they rent this property? Why they're renting it? Some areas will have like 3 at most. I'll change the dates to see if there's like any changes in the kind of number availabilities of Airbnbs. But
that's not a bad method to check, but it's kind of superficial in the sense that there could not be many listings there because there's no demand. There could not be many listings because licensing requirements are stricter in that area.
Right.
There could be not be many listings because nobody's hit that spot yet, and then you've hit the jackpot. But I think you need deeper analysis too. Are you coming to our summit, by the way, or streaming into our summit? Because there's a lot of people talking about exactly that. That is 12, 13 April.
Oh, April 13th. I guess we will now.
It's in my signature in the last couple of emails I sent to you. So even if you're not here, joining in via the stream will be pretty useful, I think, as well. There's at least 3 or 4 people who are going to be talking about Minpaku.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I was
a bunch of people in the Zoom room that you can liaise with, and some of them would be experienced Minpaku operators as well.
Yeah.
I think I just listened to the like recordings of the previous summit today.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
The advantage is that you can, with the live stream, you can float questions directly to the speakers that will be answered, and you can network with the people in the chat room, which is very handy too.
Okay, that sounds good. I think that we'll also join that.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in WebDiz Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company, Innovatius, is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best.
So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
So we're looking for, we want to kind of get a place by the end of the year is kind of our goal. And like, if we find a listing that we really like, and like we do kind of, we talk to our agent about it, everything clears out, you guys consult on it, and it looks good, but we can't make it there until November.
Well, I don't know. Did you speak to that agent about remote signing of documents? Can she handle a purchase remotely? Most foreign
agents. We haven't gone anywhere that far.
Okay. Well, before we decide if we're working with her or not, that'll be important to find out. Most foreigner-friendly agents are able to handle remote settlements, and definitely able to handle remote viewing. Like, they go to the property and they zoom with you to show you what it looks like.
Right.
I wouldn't trust the listing. I mean, they are Japanese, they tend to be honest, but we have had two or three cases where they kind of skipped over areas that didn't look that good. So I would definitely get the buyer agent to do that for you, not the listing agent.
Okay.
She should definitely be open to doing everything remotely. So you shouldn't have to come here for anything. If she's not, then we better work with another one.
Do we assume that she's the buyer agent?
No, yeah, because if she's working with us, she's the buyer
agent. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she could also be the listing agent. I don't know. But most of the ones who service foreigners are buyer side agents. They wouldn't be listing property. I mean, they might occasionally, but I'm not sure. Okay. We can confirm with her. But most importantly is, can she handle everything remotely? And is she open to a WhatsApp chat group with a consultant?
Okay.
And if not, then I'll just loop one of the ones that we regularly work with. And if she is, that's great, because I'll be very happy to send more work her way.
Okay, great. I have those questions listed down that I will ask her. I'm trying to get a meeting in with her on Thursday. So
okay.
I guess we'll know more when we discuss with them. We're trying to look a little further out, so that we're looking for something newer.
The only other thing is, sorry, just forgot to mention.
Yeah.
Based on her name, I'm assuming she's not native Japanese, right?
I think she is.
She is?
Kazumi?
So maybe Rina, not Lina?
Oh, you're talking about me?
No, her.
Oh, Kazumi.
I saw a Lina May somewhere.
That's me.
Oh, that's you. Oh, I'm so sorry.
No worries, no worries. Definitely not native Japanese.
Okay. Wires crossed, ignore me.
Let me see what her full name.
Yeah, Kazumi definitely sounds Japanese. Yeah, that's fine.
Yes. Is it this email? No. Lots of emails. Okay. It looks like Kazumi Tsuboi.
Tsuboi.
Yeah.
Yeah, Remax, yeah, founder.
Yeah. I think that's the kind of only information I found on her, is the one photo. Have you heard of Dovetail? I guess it's another agency that opened in Tokyo that's doing similar consultant work. And that is like the group that is on Real Japan, Real Estate Japan, or Real Japan Real Estate, whatever that website is. At least they were linked there, and they sent us her
Dovetail.
Info.
Oh, yeah, there they are.
Yeah.
Friendly staff speak English, Japanese, and Chinese.
Yeah.
I think I've looked at that tagline from the CEO. Sounds familiar. I think I might have seen something by them. But no, haven't worked with them. Can't say.
Yeah, I don't think nearly as long as NTI has been around. I think
we're not agents though. We're a totally different service.
Oh yeah, I don't know that they're agents. Consultant. Actually, are they consultants or agents?
I just went to the seminar.
We just went to the seminar because we were looking into more information. But we will definitely shoot her an email. Well, we'll see when she replies, and then we'll try to set up that meeting to discuss with her. And if I guess if she never comes back to us, we'll reach back out to you and see if you can connect us with anyone else.
We should always be able to. That's not an issue.
Okay.
There's not that many of them that we can vet and have worked with, but there's always at least a handful.
Yeah, I think we have a bunch of questions listed. I think we've got to a lot of them. Do you want to gander through? Do you have any other questions? Or
I think that was all of them.
Yeah. Or anything you think we should know before we kind of proceed?
Well, we'll have a lot more toing and froing when we're actually analyzing particular listings and doing the viewings, and definitely when we do structural inspections and licensing inquiries, but probably we've covered the basics.
Should we only be kind of sharing listings that we really want? Because there's a lot of listings, so it's like hard to...
Well, I don't
know
about Kazumi-san, but most of the agents that we work with can get a bit overwhelmed, so we normally ration it like 5 listings at a time, investigate those. And also, when they reach out to listing agents, they get information and they, oh, okay, no, thank you. If they do that too many times, that agent doesn't want to work with them again, so better to take it a little bit slower, like 5 at a time would be a good number.
Okay. And then are we sharing that with her versus like her sharing listings with us?
Like, both work.
Okay. So we should give like some top ones and then see.
Well, I mean, you're always going to be the best filter because you can look at a few photos and a map location and figure out if it ticks your boxes or not.
Right.
With other people researching for you, it's going to be a bit more hit and miss, but it does give you more listings. So both work.
Right. With the listings that she just shared, like normally they would share more information than just like location and age. There would be like potentially like a link to their profile, potentially having other photos, right?
Normally, but if she just got like, you know, like a English facing side to her listings that she just shares, you know, summarized information on, it could be not as thorough as like Sumo and the rest of them. Is she reluctant to share the original Sumo listing or whatever with you? Or you said you couldn't find it?
We haven't. It's just the very first emails that we've had with her. So we're not sure exactly how she operates.
I don't know. Yeah, the answer is each agent works a bit differently. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think she's been really quick and asked us our preferences, and then...
Well, she initially said that she was going to start, like, researching listings immediately, but we asked her to hold off until we were, like, until we had this meeting and had a better idea of how we were going to proceed. Okay. Because we didn't want her reaching out to properties and then go with somebody else and have her do that.
No, I agree. That's a good policy to maintain relationships, so... Okay, so now that you know that if you want to, you can bring us in with whatever agent, then maybe have a second conversation with her, see if she's the one we want to go ahead with, and if not, we'll connect with somebody else.
Okay.
We can always start with her, and if it doesn't work out, just, you know, stop with her and start with somebody else. I just don't want to do it multiple on multiple fronts.
Okay, and like, normally, how quickly does these things get, like... What's the general timeline of kind of like...
In this kind of area, in an urban area, usually things move a bit quicker than in the really out rural area Akiyas. So you can expect once your offer has been accepted and we go ahead and conduct a structural inspection, you can probably factor in about a month and a half, assuming we like the inspection report, about a month and a half to contract signing and deposit payment, which is normally about 10%. And then probably another month after that for settlement. So worst case, maybe 3 months from when an offer has been accepted.
So if we make
there are some extreme cases where the seller is like a super old person who never kept a single document and everything has to be reproduced, but normally up to about 3 months.
Okay. And if we like kind of make an offer in October and it's like ready to go and we could come in and see it, because we're trying to get over to Osaka in November. That's kind of like the cheapest time right now to get there. would it be possible?
Yeah, but if you make nobody's going to take an offer on a vacant house from you before somebody's viewed the property. So you coming over to see it can be like a second phase viewing. But if we conduct a viewing, submit an offer, and then you come in and you look at it and say, actually, no, then that's going to kill the relationship with that agent. Mm. So whether you're doing the viewing or we're doing the viewing on your behalf, please try to make your decision based on that, so that the only thing we might pull out because of would be the structural inspection report, not anything else.
Right. And so if we do the first viewing, like we arrive in Osaka and we want to do the viewings initially ourselves, will the current listings even still be available potentially by November? I think that's kind of our concern.
I'd say about maybe half of them. Most of them would not, but you're looking at pretty old, cheap houses. So maybe there's something wrong with them that people already kind of find out about. So I don't know. But in Osaka, normally they go pretty quickly.
Okay, that's good to know. So
I have another call in 5 minutes. I will have to cut it, but we can have another one if you want to just reschedule at a later date.
Okay, yeah, no problem. I think we're gonna talk to our agent and then we'll reach back out to you if she's completely okay with NTI consulting. Great, thank you. Thank you so much.
So there you have it. Probably more than you ever wanted to know about renting and leasing in Japan. But if you still have any questions on the topic or any other topic related to this conversation, whether it's the business manager visa, Osaka's market overall, or anything else, don't be shy to reach out. You can send us text, recorded voice, audio, anything you want, and we'll try to get all of your questions answered here on the podcast. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.